All right, this is Bob Stone for Florida Folklife. It's July 21st, 1995, with Mary Johns. We're talking about the Seminole Herbal Medicine Apprenticeship. We're at the Big Cypress Reservation. So Mary, I know you probably can't talk about everything. Put this a little closer.
Yeah.
But
that's
good. But what can you tell me about the stuff you've covered?
We've covered genealogy and some history and a lot of the brothers and sisters, you know, that she used to know that were of her family, as well as just people she knew. So that was very interesting. And then we've covered a lot of the songs and singing that goes with the medicine.
Yeah, I know that's one of the things you wanted to cover.
Yeah. And she's been out gathering herbs with me once in a while and showing me things that I really didn't know about before. So that's been a lot of adventure for us.
She's one of the oldest members. One of the
seniors. Yeah, she's one of the oldest ones. Monica, come here, Taylor. Yeah, she's with Okome. So she's
Get over there with Monica.
And you're pretty sure that she's old, more than 95.
Yeah. my grandmother was 90, 80 something.
Yeah, who was 90. That?
My grandmother, my maternal grandmother.
Uh-huh. what was her name?
When she passed away, Lillian Bowers. Uh-huh. Lillian Stone Bowers. That's when she passed away, that's been 20 years ago or more. I think it's been like 1973 somewhere. And she's about the same age as her.
So that would put her almost like 105 or something.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It really would. They grew up together and they knew each other. So that puts her, you know, quite a bit up in age. And like I was saying, you know, that pilot, the boy that was there that day we visited, he's over 50. He's older than I am by 2 or 3 years. So, you know, he's got to be, she's got to be a lot more.
Uh-huh.
So, her brother just passed away. Buffalo Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just passed away. I think about a year or so ago, and he was up there too. Really up there.
You know, it was not too long after I was down here with you all, what was that, February, I guess. David Jumper gave a little talk. There was a Florida Folklore Society meeting in Gainesville. And he talked some about Seminole medicine. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head. He was talking about you make the concoctions with the liquid, the liquid mixture.
Yeah.
Or make a powder. And then and even smoke sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, matter of fact, he said he got treated for something in his ear.
Mm-hmm. And they just blow it in your ear smoke, with yeah. smoke. Uh-huh.
So sometimes you wash with the liquid, or sometimes uh-huh. you drink it.
Yeah. And sometimes you steam with it.
Uh-huh.
They put it in a pot, boil it hot, and set it underneath a chair, and then drape you with blankets or sheets, and they just steam you up with it. That's another way to do it.
Is a sweat lodge part of Seminole culture?
We do have sweat lodge, but up until now, it hasn't been as an everyday use. No, not everyday use, but like in everyday medicine use.
Uh-huh.
It's just been part of the corn dance ceremonials.
Uh-huh.
And I understand they used to do it as regularly as some of the other tribes too. But we never really did it.
When is the corn dance?
The corn dance is part of the ceremonies that is done to first of all, we don't separate our religion from our everyday life,
uh-huh.
and can't separate it from the medicine either.
Uh-huh.
So. Our ceremonial year used to be divided into four portions with which they would gather the people and have different dances and different ceremonial functions during different parts of the year.
Uh-huh.
There would be one in the spring that would be berry, and then there was another one in early summer, which was the corn dance. And then the one in later summer, which was the little green corn. And then there was another one in the fall, right after the first frost, that they call a hunting dance, or they called it the snake dance, because most of the dances were done in a manner of, you know, a snake.
Winding,
you know, like a snake. And so that's what a lot of the older folks used to call it. They used to call it Tiana Tivye or Kinanitska. And that other three parts of the ceremonial year has been deleted and has been just two in the past, just that. The hunting dance in the green corn was practiced here for a long time, since the end of the wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was just so few people. They said that they just had to combine a year's worth of ceremonials into one and just celebrate it at the green corn dance time. And that was the early summer one. So that's what they did, but they still had the hunting dance until just a few years ago. I think it was 1977 or something like that was the last time that one was held. So we don't have that snake dance anymore. And so the corn dance is the only one that's left, but it's supposed to have like four, you know, parts to it. So they go 4 days. I know some people in other places, you know, like North Florida, and there's some that's been reviving. One up in, what's that place? The Porch Creek. People.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to revive one, I think. And there's some in Oklahoma. And I'm not sure whether they do theirs four times a year or not. But I think there was like just over a weekend or something.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But around here, when Corn Dance comes around, man, you got to expect to be there. You want to be there for at least a week,
uh-huh.
You know, just to be there to socialize with the people. And
so pretty much everybody goes?
A lot of people go, yeah. Not everybody goes there to stay. Uh-huh. You know, like there's an inner circle that uh-huh. that's makes the thing function, and they stay there during uh-huh. the week. But there are people who come out just for certain days
uh-huh.
and they dance. Drinking used to be real bad out there, but it's not so now. It's not uh-huh. that bad.
And the Corn Dance grounds are near Yeehaw Junction, is that what you were saying?
Yeah, one is, uh-huh. and the other two are South Florida.
Uh-huh.
And the corn ceremony is done because corn was the major staple with the Creeks and the Hidjiti people.
Uh-huh.
And they said that at one time she was a human being. And so that's the reason why you have to fast for corn uh-huh. once a year, since she sacrificed herself so that the people will eat, you know, and have a staple food that uh-huh. they can depend on. So that's the one thing you do for her every year, is to fast one day for her before you eat the green corn. So it's done, you know, like right after the corn gets the milk in it. So
corn was still pretty big with the Seminoles?
Oh, it's still pretty big, even now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, corn is the soft kid, it's the bread, and
uh-huh.
it's the soup thickener, and it's, uh-huh. you know, uh-huh. we just eat corn.
Uh-huh.
Well, you would think that flour would take over, but really it hasn't.
Still?
Uh-huh. I think for bread, flour and corn is the two major staples that we use.
Yeah. And a lot of people still make their own bread.
Mm-hmm. They do. So corn is still very important. And I guess, you know, if you don't do this, I guess it's like a fertility rite for the corn and for the people who depend on the corn. So if you don't do this, then they think that the corn will not grow as good
mm-hmm.
to feed the people. And if you don't feed the people, you know what happens, right?
Right.
No food, no people.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's a reason. A lot of people talk about green corn, but I don't think anybody really ever thinks about the other three parts of the ceremonial year.
Uh-huh.
Really, I don't. I mean, they don't even consider it as being important.
Uh-huh.
But every time you talk about any of the ceremonials to anyone who comes up, the only thing they've heard about is the green corn.
Yeah, uh-huh, that's the first thing you hear about.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're coming to the age where you are allowed to practice all this that you're learning.
Well,
is there any?
I'm starting a little late. I mean, I've known things like from my own maternal grandmothers for a long time that helped me through, you know, many things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like if you know the herbs, you can ask other people to make medicine for you, and they tell you what they want. You just go out and pick it and take it to them, and they fix it, and you get it and use it. So I could do that. I could go out and pick my own herbs and stuff. And then you have to know certain things about even just about raising your kids, having children, you know, there's things that you have to know. And so those kinds of things, you know, my maternal grandmothers took care of that. So I was all right with that. But knowing how to sing and making the actual medicine was what I was interested in. And she's the one grandma that picked up those things. And my maternal grandmother, she didn't know a whole lot of that. She just knew, like, history and lore and genealogy and just different things about our background, where we're from, you know, and things like that. And this grandma has been able to confirm that, you know, like what I already knew. So that was, you know, that was very supportive for me.
Good.
So.
Does she feel pretty good about telling it? She said she likes to talk about the stuff.
She does. She likes to talk about the stuff. And I like to spend more time with her, but I've been on the road an awful lot this year. And it's like, oh man, I want to get over there, but I got to go do this and go do that. And I suppose that's what Jeanette's been finding too, because she hadn't showed up for any of the sessions we had.
She thought
she might be able to come and sit with us.
She's working on a project of taping the elders.
Jeanette, is she?
Yeah, that's what she told me. She was trying to tape record a bunch of them. Do you tape Susie?
I've taped Susie. And I've got a bunch of it. I think 7 tapes, and I had duplicates made. So that I would have duplicates to play back instead of the originals.
Right, yeah, that's the way to do it.
So, I think she feels pretty comfortable with me because we've been able to discuss a lot of things. I know I feel comfortable with her whenever I sit with her. So.
That's good. Well, you know, all that. Of course, I don't have too much on tape, but any of the photographs, you know, I've got some good ones besides the one you've seen. They'll be in our archive, so if anybody ever wants them, they can. You know, it's just basically get them at cost. So, because we have a good archive, it's all climate controlled and everything. So, so they'll be in there.
Okay.
Because I heard you today, or Pat was talking about photos. So.
Yeah.
We do a lot of black and white because they last longer.
I like to have one. How much do they run? What does that cost?
Something I just thought of. Do you, how about, you know, modern medicine and using that with traditional herbal medicine? Do you use both or what's?
Yeah.
And is that what a lot of people do?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people do. A lot of them. Especially nowadays. But certain makers of medicine are making distinctions between what is treatable by just regular American medicine and what is best treated by Indian method. So usually after you go see a doctor, you know, like if it's emergency treatment, you just go see a doctor, go to an emergency room. And then afterwards, maybe you seek a maker of medicine and go to him and get some different medicines made, take care of the problem so you don't have a problem with it later. And since I think the majority of the time that people go to a maker of medicine is medicine for the the spirit, you know, the psychological portion, the emotional portion of that person. And they make the best psychiatrists for me. That's what it does. They listen to your problems, and then they come up with the medicine to have an idea of what the diagnosis is, and then they give you the herbs to go pick, and you go get it, and they make the medicine for you. So during the process, something happens, and things start to get better. And I think oftentimes it's the holistic idea of it.
We're not specialized. like the doctors and specialists, you know, you see for one narrow, specific thing.
They're internalists, cardiologists, right. ENTs, right. and so forth.
How about male and female traditional, you know, practitioners? Is there a difference in
male
what the men do?
One thing that gets forgot is, and here lately, it's been a Caucasian influence in that they don't want the women to have anything to do with medicine. But in the past, that's all who they had to depend on, because it was the woman that survived the wars, and she had to pass things to the children. And it was the old people, you know, old ladies and old men that survived, that passed this tradition down to us. So if I don't think that this art would survive, or this whole culture would survive, if that strong woman had not been there, you know, to take over the role of the men, and they go hunting, and they did gathering, they did farming, and, you know, so that the old men and the children can survive. And they had very few men left after the war. So, but the roles in medicine is like the women specialized in men and women and children, and the men would have medicine for, they could treat everybody, but they preferred not to treat women during childbirth, and things like that. So if there was an old lady who knew how to make medicine, it was her that the women would turn to for, you know, for their medicine during childbirth and in menstrual period times and stuff like that. The reason for that was because they thought that if you were a young man and you were still able to hunt and needed to hunt, that the woman had powers during that time that could interfere with their hunting ability, and to be able to get around and do things like doing farming and building chickies and stuff like that. So that was part of the reason why they wouldn't treat women during that time. Any other time they would treat everyone. But older women, they had medicine. I knew women who could make medicine for just about anything, as well as the men. Just as well as the men, almost. But men have to go through a specialized training to get their abilities, and women don't. They can just, people can teach them things, and they're like a reservoir. They can just collect during certain parts of their lives, And then when they reach maturity, they would have the capability to make medicine or do healing. And most of the time that's like after the menopause.
Is there any kind of a formal recognition at that time?
Not really.
No.
What happens is a gradual onset of recognition where people begin to come to you and ask you to make this and that. Could you name this baby for me? Could you make this little medicine for my child? Or for, I have a headache. Could you make this for me? You know, and so on and so on. And it just gradually builds up.
Reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With men, is there a formal thing?
It's the same sort of thing. Uh-huh. It's a matter of word of mouth.
But the man would have somebody, they're expected to have somebody actually train them.
Yeah.
Or a woman would just pick it up wherever she could.
Yeah, as children, you know, like they would sit with their grandmothers or, you know. But men, after their certain age, you know, like after they're like 12, 13 years old, they would start going to like a school.
Uh-huh.
And they would go out and study plants as well as hear songs and, and stuff like that, you know. And it's a long process. Which if you're old enough to be married, your wife would have to understand quite a bit why you disappear for days at a time. So that's how it is with them.
And that still goes on?
Uh-huh. But men can do the same way as women, too. You know, like they can go sit with an older person and just sit down and listen to them while they talk.
Now, is it just...
a lot of things.
So, and it wouldn't be everybody. It'd be just certain people that have, like, an inclination for this? Or would every man or every woman try and learn some? Or?
Yeah. A lot of people just like to know a thing or two. They really do, but there's few of them that have a leaning to it that just takes off and learns all this stuff,
right.
You know, and eventually becomes a good maker of medicine. Others just, you know a thing or two, but it's better to know a thing or two and than not at all.
Sure,
that's what they say. So. I think everyone tries to pursue it at one time or another. So it's been an interesting
good
experience with her. Because
thanks for coming up to the festival. I know it's... I hope that was fun for you. I know it's not easy. And it takes time, but
yeah.
We appreciate you coming up.
It was nice. I was sure glad that you guys could tote me around there, but otherwise I couldn't have made it around there.
Well, it's a big park.
It's a big park, and it's full of people and full of hills.
Yeah, and it's hot.
It's hot.
Yeah.
Dusty and hot.
Sure. No, anytime you come up, you know, we can help you out like that.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you anytime you want to come on.
Yeah, well, next time I might just have you rent me one of those little carts so I can, I can get around. I was